When something burns, our everyday experience tells us that there's less of it. It was burnt to a crisp. There's only just a few burnt stakes standing out of the ground of my beautiful house. Your general everyday experience tells you that when something burns, there's less of it. Now, we have to obviously turn this around with chemistry. As part of our education, this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific or discuss chemical reactions or teaching of chemistry. Now, I'm on cardiac rehab and I'm slowly going through explaining different things, part of reliving lessons or revising my teaching content and essentially organizing it up, developing a body of podcasts, which I'll eventually cross-reference and create a directory for. But this is a long way off yet. It'll be a while before I get a chance to do that. So burning stuff, it's something that people think they know about, are very familiar with. They can... They may have been burnt, or they may have seen fires, bushfires, or cooking, or all that type of stuff, or eaten burnt food. There's all that experience there. In general, the idea that something is well-formed, complex, and then it goes into something less useful. And so what one wants to do is to have a method of showing the burning, whether something increases in mass or decreases in mass when it burns. Now, people discussing will say, oh, well, when something burns, it goes up in smoke. It disappears into the smoke, and you've got to see if you can capture the smoke. What I want to do is sort of set up a few basic experiments. So for this, you'll need an electronics balance, some sort of insulation device, or your burning will actually burn your electronics, or could burn your electronics balance. So perhaps a asbestos mat. Oh, you probably won't have an asbestos mat nowadays. That has generally been removed. Possibly a few little bead spacers to sit your beaker on top of. And you measure the mass of your beads, the mass of the beaker, and you put in a mass of fuel, which you will burn into your beaker. Now, one of the things I suppose with fuel and stuff like that, it's a bit hard to burn it in a beaker because there's not an airflow into the beaker. So for that, you need to make a hole in your fuel, and into your fuel put a glass pipe suspended such that it doesn't interact with the weight at all. And into that glass pipe, you want to introduce either a gentle flow of air from what I can recommend, a fish pump produces about the right flow of air, or something else which I haven't got, but thoroughly recommend, having kept up to date with that technology. You can have a oxygen gas bottle to introduce air. That's sort of rather hefty to take around the class and requires a bit of control, maintenance of the valve and the regulator, renting and stuff like that. One of the things I really do think should be in school laboratories, and it's not there yet because it's 20 years old. So that's too new for a science laboratory. That's something called an oxygen generator or concentrator. So let's divert for a second and consider one of these. You need a source of oxygen if you're going to burn things, or burn things effectively, efficiently, and repeatably. And the traditional source of oxygen, people would know from hospitals and stuff like that, is that black bottle with a white or slightly off-white top and a handle on the top, and that's your typical oxygen bottle. It's black and sort of grey-white, not perfect oxygen bottle white, I'll call it, on the top. And that signifies oxygen. Now, you've got welding-grade oxygen and there's medical-grade oxygen, which they've made sure there's no petrol fumes or other toxic fumes in it. So you don't want to actually breathe in oxygen from an oxy-welder. So in general, in the school, there will be oxygen bottles from oxy-welders. But what I really do think is that there is a need or a niche market, not for medical-grade oxygen generators. So these are oxygen generators which provide oxygens in the so many litres per minute to people who need oxygen. Rather than getting oxygen bottles, they have this thing called an oxygen generator. So let's review how this works. There's a porous carbon called activated charcoal. We don't use that, but I'm just going to mention it because it'll get you thinking mentally of the idea. So activated charcoal is charcoal in which it has been burnt, and it's burnt under very controlled conditions such that a tiny little point burns, and it burns a complicated channel through the carbon. It's a carbon with a very thin hole through it. And so they put the charcoal in the hopper and introduce oxygen to it and reduce the oxygen such that it just barely burns. And it burns such a way that it burns these tiny little holes. Makes it a porous cake. In fact, if you get some activated charcoal in the hammer, you can actually crush it down. There's a lot of holes and a little bit of carbon. Most of the carbon has been burnt away as these very tiny holes, little wormholes, meters of holes, if it's done correctly, can be inside. So this means it's carbon's like an aerogel. It's got a huge, huge surface area. In fact, if I can say, if you have aerogel, that is your ideal thermal insulation for your experiment here, where you've got electronic beaker. Ideally, aerogel. You can order this in. It's beautiful stuff, and it's worthwhile showing students that your beaker, to start off with, let's say, just carbon. That's something which is loose. If I can recommend cotton wool, this is cotton, you want to burn this. Now, if you burn cotton, it'll go out pretty quickly. And if you want anything liquid, liquid there, so you need, for effective burning, really a source of oxygen just to blow through it. I'd have to check it out. I don't know whether cotton and oxygen, if you just filled it up with oxygen, cotton, it would burn too effectively. If you had a rate too quick, it might actually go puff. I'm not sure. Magnesium wool definitely does go poof, poof, explodes quite a lot. So you have your oxygen blowing through it. Now, it is important to blow oxygen or have oxygen cognitively for it. So I haven't actually done this with cotton wool and oxygen, so I don't know whether that would explode. I should have to tell you a bit about gun cotton again related to it. So you burn this, and as expected, confirming everyone's understanding of what goes on, if you have so many grams of cotton after it's burnt, it'll be, say, if you have 10 grams, it will burn down to about half a gram when you burn it, and there'll be some smoke, and you'll have to ensure that it's fume extracted or in a place that doesn't choke students or just students looking on. So that basically confirms one viewpoint of what's going on. Then just observing, noting, like we're doing a few experiments. Now, this is one of the things people tend to do, is that they tend to hypothesize and overwork the students, or overwork the thinking before you've got enough data. It's sort of like someone going to a crime scene and solving it before they get out of the car by looking at a piece of flint where there's a huge amount of evidence around there. So in this idea, we've done it, and our ten. So what happens is you basically put in the cotton, zero it, then put in the cotton, zero it again, so you can see basically whether the mass increases or decreases. So you need a relatively good balance. So there's two grades of very cheap balances, which in general you give out to the students for their work. There's also an electronic balance, which is good to point 0.01 grams in measuring. So that's very good and very sensitive. Now, so let's talk about what an oxygen generator is. I talked a bit about carbon, activated carbon. There is this a ceramic, I don't know, it's called zeolite. So I'll research and understand exactly how that's actually put together. But this is very much a similar type of thing. It's ceramic with huge amounts of holes. So handful of zeolite is several square meters of surface area, because it's a little grain, but it's got lots of tiny, minuscule holes in it. So the idea is you have your oxygen generator, and they cost $1,000 or so each, possibly under $1,000 for a regenerated one. But for a school, you don't need, you don't need so many liters per minute. You need so many liters per hour, and it goes into a bag, which you then release the oxygen. Now, our oxygen is in the zeolite. What happens is there is a container with zeolite in it, and depending on the process, I've actually only read patents for it, so I haven't actually seen the actual construction of this. These have come out since 2005 in Australia, I think. So they have a pressure vessel with the zeolite in it. So that's can be down to beneath atmospheric pressure, but then it's pumped with several atmospheres, 2-3 atmospheres of air. Now, the zeolite preferentially absorbs nitrogen. It's just one of those fantastic things. Oxygen's usually the major player here, but in this case, it preferentially absorbs oxygen. And so if you then pump it up and then bleed off at high pressure the air that you've pumped into the zeolite chamber, you'll pump out mostly oxygen first, because the nitrogen has stuck to the surface. You then obviously have to pump out that surface again, so reduce the pressure, and the nitrogen will come off that surface. So it's basically you're denitrogenizing the air. So that's your oxygen generator. So there's thousands and thousands of uses for an oxygen generator. And so I think in a school environment, we've got multiple labs. It's something which could be in the affordable list, along with a good vacuum pump. So we we introduce oxygen into the cotton wool. It burns, and you'll expect to lose most of it, and it will burn down to nothing. And without much ado, you say, well, we're now going to do steel wool. If I can recommend going out and buying some of the finest grade steel wool that burns. And again, when you have a small, very small flow of oxygen into your container, you can have an exposed watch glass, this is hard to control. When you burn this, the actual mass will increase because your iron plus oxygen, F2O3, you get a fairly large increase in the amount of the weight there, and you can actually work it out, and it actually turns out to be very accurate. And this basically needs some resolution. Now, at this stage, people can say that the iron didn't go up in smoke. The iron actually attracted oxygen out of the air. And so what you have is you start off with iron, and then you have iron plus oxygen. I can't do the maths in my head. It's at 26, Z of 26, 54, 108, and oxygen is 16 times 3 is 36 is, can't be 48, is it? 48. Yeah, so it's roughly, it increases in mass by roughly half, just off the top of my head. You'll have to check it. It's not that you want your students to be able to do that, but you've got the phenomena that the one chemical reaction, the gas is coming from the atmosphere and going in. Another chemical reaction you're watching, the atmosphere is providing oxygen. Oxygen is coming in and actually burning with the material, converting it to carbon dioxide and removing the material. And so this is a general way of saying it is conservation of mass, but it's not. But what we measure is not conserved because materials entering and leaving. So this is a good basic science lesson to discuss. So in this, I've given the basic things, I suppose added a bit more things that you may not have access to, but it's a very good, I suppose, industrial use of some ideas, your high quality electronic balance, your aerogel to separate insulate your steel wool from your scales. Now, I only say that because it can get quite hot going through, and you obviously don't want to put a high temperature on your scales. And the oxygen, an oxygen generator, so people in general in their day-to-day life will know about oxygen bottles, they'll see it in hospitals. The understanding of zeolite, it's called, this special ceramic. I'll have to actually look up how it's actually made, and the process of adsorption. So it's absorbing but being added. So it's adsorption goes on, the preferential absorption, and a cycle to produce it. So what may well be happening is that there's the market for these things, and this is obviously a good use of it. So that's just a review of an introduction to chemistry, and the ability to start to write chemical equations. It's really good to put this up for people to observe and think about, and let them to mull through different ideas, let them to process it first before immediately introducing chemical reactions. It's just teaching observations that that it is worthwhile to actually let them wonder and try and clue things out, because it gets them in a state of their mind and a readiness to accept or to process or evaluate new information. You don't necessarily want people accepting information, you want them to evaluate it, and when they've positively evaluated, ticking it off and remembering. So the steel will burn quite spectacularly in tiny little beads, as it melts the flame front, you'll see silver. And so this is probably something to show prior to the actual experiment, show both cotton and steel wool burning separately before you actually go into this more detailed experiment. The important thing to do, I think, there is to show it burning separately. So this is cotton and a match, and a steel wool and a match. So the thing to focus on is that thing, to actually cognitively get them to have it separated out in their mind. I'll discuss a few things more, but this is for teaching science. In the meantime, keep on thinking and teaching science. Thanks for listening.